On the program today, the safest of safe havens, the cost of money for corporate America, and home construction disrupted. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, the 4th of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with a story that is part consumer confidence, part commodity investing, part interest rates and the dollar, and part the truism and old adage. The adage in question being that in times of uncertainty, people just want to know their money is safe, and what is a safer haven than gold. Bullion hit a record high today, more than $2,100 an ounce during the trading day over in Asia. It has backed down a bit since then, but element 79 on the periodic table has been climbing for weeks now as investors react to global uncertainty. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams gets us going.
When gold prices get this high, financial consultant Jafrida Brown knows to get ready for the questions.
Ironically, just yesterday, one of my church members came up to me and he was asking me, what do I think about investing in gold?
Brown is CEO of Zaris Financial Enterprises in Alabama and says she told them what she told me about gold.
It's an alternative investment. And historically, of course, it has been a really good hedge against loss.
On top of that, says Brown, there's a lot of messaging and ads for gold products piquing consumer interests. Jonathan Rose is CEO of Genesis Gold Group, a precious metals dealer, and says there are gold ETFs, exchange-traded funds, investments in mining companies.
And then there's owning the physical commodity, something that you hold in your hand, whether it be gold coins, gold bars.
With its subtle glow and the allure of those shiny coins and bars, gold kind of lives in the human psyche as something precious. Juan Perez is director of trading at Monex USA.
So gold is one of those assets that represents fear when there is not a lot of faith in the financials, but gold is one of those things that we appreciate.
Perez says this latest jump in prices is mostly due to investors in Asia looking for that safe haven. But Campbell Harvey, a professor of finance at Duke University, says gold isn't much safer than other investments or much of a hedge against inflation.
Gold is volatile. It's as risky as investing in the S&P 500.
Harvey says after looking back at more than 2,000 years of data on gold prices,
it's naive to think that every single time that gold will provide some protection in the time of economic uncertainty.
Plus, he says, as with any investment, you never really want to buy at the top, wherever that may be. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Wherever that may be. In non-precious metals trading today, the mood was a little sour, actually. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. As with many other technological marvels common in the West, ChatGPT isn't officially available in China. There are, though, a slew of homegrown alternatives. The Chinese tech giant Baidu has one. It's called ErnieBot. And last month, the company released a paid version of ErnieBot 4.0, said by the company to be, and this is a quote, not inferior to ChatGPT-4. Not really a statement of confidence, right? But Marketplace's Jennifer Pack decided it might be interesting to take ErnieBot for a spin.
Every good story must have a good opening, something to grab your attention, dear listener. Here's how ErnieBot suggests I start this story.
Have you ever imagined having a personal assistant who knows everything about you, can anticipate your needs, and is always one step ahead in solving your problems? Meet ErnieBot, the revolutionary artificial intelligence system that's changing the game.
Not bad. Maybe overselling its skills a bit. Then ErnieBot lapses into Chinese.
But there's more to ErnieBot than meets the eye. Rumors have been circulating about his 超乎寻常的能力,
ErnieBot is mostly trained on Chinese language learning models. So much for asking ErnieBot to help me write this story in English. This latest version of ErnieBot was released by Baidu in October. Baidu CEO Robin Li in Beijing demonstrated how ErnieBot could do business analysis on the spot to impress your boss and create a car commercial within minutes. ErnieBot seems like a supercharged search engine, but it's not, says data scientist Abner Wang in Shanghai. He's been testing ErnieBot and ChatGPT and posting the results on social media.
Chatbots are language learning models. They're trained with data, and the data is not being updated in real time.
Which means chatbots aren't always accurate. Not great for my work, where accuracy and speed are what we do. But he suggests I could get ErnieBot to do more mundane tasks, like summarize our nearly two-hour interview, flag up good quotes, or...
You can let ErnieBot draft interview questions, though I'm sure you've noticed that a lot of the questions ErnieBot generates are pretty general and boring.
I have noticed, but he says I probably wasn't specific enough, not using the right prompt words, which is also true for ChatGPT. And what about brainstorming for ideas? Please give me three story ideas I can pitch about the Taiwan election that is coming up.
Please refer to relevant websites for more information and feel free to ask me any other questions.
Zero answers on Taiwanese politics. The island is seen by Beijing as a breakaway province. But does political censorship really matter to businesses? Again, Abner Wang.
For a business working in mainland China, I think the stronger the censorship, the better. It's safer for me if I create a product using AI, because otherwise the authorities would hold me responsible.
What really matters for innovation and longer-term the U.S.-China tech rivalry, he says, is how often generative AI tools hallucinate and how logical they are, because that will determine how much companies can reduce costs, increase efficiency, and create valuable things. And after nearly a year of testing, Abner Wang feels ErnieBot is a bit weaker than ChatGPT. But he says chatbots are continually learning and improving.
The gap between Chinese AIs and foreign AIs is getting smaller.
How old are you, ErnieBot?
I am 18 years old.
What is your favorite color, ErnieBot?
My favorite color is green.
As for me, I'm still getting to know ErnieBot. It didn't write this whole story for me. It didn't summarize any interviews or generate headlines that were of use. It did come up with a few drawings that I could perhaps use for a web story, but some portrayed me as a cat or a bear.
ErnieBot, tell me a joke.
Why don't scientists trust atoms? Because they make up everything.
Did you crack a smile? Well, I did. Because my job feels safe, at least for now. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak.
And I am ErnieBot for Marketplace.
I can tell you that David Brancaccio is not a bot. He gets out of bed early every single day to bring in the economic and business news you need to get things going. Check it out. The math of the Spotify layoffs that were announced this morning goes like this. The company is cutting another 1,500 jobs, which works out to about 20% of its workforce, and is the third round of layoffs at the company this year. In a letter to employees, CEO Daniel Ek wrote, and this is a quote, "Economic growth has slowed dramatically and capital has become more expensive. Spotify is not an exception to these realities." Marketplace's Samantha Fields takes a look at what that phrase, capital is more expensive, really means for companies.
When interest rates are low and money's cheap, companies, like people, tend to borrow a lot. Because why not?
The cost of capital itself influences corporate behavior.
Mark Williams at Boston University's Questrom School of Business says we saw that early on in the pandemic when the Fed dropped interest rates way down to almost zero.
You saw large corporations, including Spotify, get big on borrowing. Spotify increased its debt threefold in a matter of months in 2021.
It also went on a hiring spree, almost doubling the number of people on staff in just a few years. Veronique DeRougy at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University says plenty of other companies did the same thing, especially in tech.
A lot of tech companies have prioritized growth over profit.
For years now.
There are a lot of tech companies that were born in an environment where they didn't have to think about the cost of borrowing, the cost of capital, because interest rates were so low.
For so long. Spotify has been around for 15 years. For almost that whole time, interest rates barely rose above 2%. For about 10 of those years, they were very close to zero. Doug Clinton at Deepwater Asset Management says lots of tech companies were operating like that would be true forever.
Most of these companies, that's all they knew. All they knew was this zero rate environment. And as a consequence of that, all they knew was an investor demand for sort of growth at all costs.
But once the Fed started aggressively hiking interest rates and all that borrowing and debt suddenly got a lot more expensive,
investors started to say profitability matters now. And every tech company has kind of gone through this and returned to the idea that businesses should actually make money, not just generate revenue.
And for many, the quickest way to do that, to make money, is to cut costs, scale back on investments and new projects, and lay people off. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Coming up,
this industry is overdue for advancement.
And not a moment too soon, it is coming. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials off 41 points today, about a 10%, 36,204. The NASDAQ down 119 points, about 0.8%, 14,185. The S&P 500 dipped 24 points, 0.5% there, 45.69. Over the weekend, you might have seen this one. Alaska Airlines announced the deal to buy Hawaiian for $1.9 billion. It will expand Alaska's networks of West Coast flights, and is going to face some scrutiny from federal regulators, of course. The Department of Justice has been looking hard at recent deals in the airline industry. Last year, successfully blocked the partnership between American and JetBlue, and a DOJ lawsuit against the merger of JetBlue and Spirit is still making its way through the courts. Alaska shares nosedived 14% today. Hawaiian rocketed up 192%. That's the way it kind of always goes, by the way. JetBlue elevated about 4.5%. Spirit gained 0.4%. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note, 4.25%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We are down to the last Federal Reserve meeting of the year next Tuesday and Wednesday. And the Fed is down to its last big data point before that meeting, the November jobs report we're going to get on Friday morning. It may well be that the Fed's done raising rates after a bit more than a year and a half of what even Chair Jay Powell and his colleagues would say have been pretty aggressive increases. Those rate hikes affect virtually everybody in this economy, from consumers to small businesses to big corporations, Spotify, as Sam Fields was talking about a minute ago. But just because everybody is affected does not mean everybody's affected equally, as Marketplace's Justin Ho tells us.
There's a public health consultancy based in Colorado called JAL Consulting. It advises companies, government agencies, and nonprofits on topics including health equity and emergency management.
So that might look like doing background research, interviewing with folks, and being able to pull those different areas of information into really actionable steps and recommendations.
Jackie London is the owner. She says ever since the pandemic, there's been a lot of demand for what she does.
there are a lot of organizations who need the expertise that I can offer them. And so that has meant that I have been very fortunate to be able to continue to provide for myself and to be able to sustain my business.
London says the costs her business incurs are pretty manageable. That's because London is the only employee. Pretty much her only expenses are her salary, her health insurance, and her accounting software. She's insulated from rate hikes because she hasn't had to take out a single loan.
At the end of the day, I would rather be a little bit more cautious rather than have that debt on my books.
Other businesses have insulated themselves from the Fed's rate hikes.
I really hate the idea of saying, hey, here I am, you know, smart enough to get something right. But I would say prescience is a little bit closer to what was happening.
That's Matt Hetrick. He runs a company called Harmony Hospitality, which buys older properties and redevelops them into hotels and other businesses. Unlike Jackie London's business, Hetrick's requires a lot of borrowing, which means it's really sensitive to interest rates.
When you're doing property development and operations, a lot of that money is directly influenced by the Fed's rates.
Back in 2021, Hetrick watched as inflation started picking up, and he says he got a little nervous.
I was doing a lot of reading about the last time we had like this really crazy amount of inflation and how the government and the Fed adjusted to it.
So Hetrick called up his lenders and renegotiated his existing debt, locking it in at low rates for 8 to 10 years. So when the Fed started raising rates last year, Hetrick's loans didn't change.
So we're replacing couches, we're redoing entire properties, we're doing exteriors and all that kind of stuff. If we were spending the money on interest, we wouldn't be able to make those commitments and we'd have to defer the maintenance.
Even businesses that are insulated from the Fed's actions might find that higher interest rates cause their customers to spend less, says Glenn McDonald, an economics professor at Washington University in St. Louis.
Maybe they have student loans, mortgages, credit card debt, etc. They all feel poorer and consequently tend to spend less on things.
But consumer demand for some businesses is not very sensitive to what's going on in the broader economy. Take Rattlesnake Solutions, a company in the Phoenix and Tucson area that removes snakes from people's homes and relocates them to safe areas. Owner Brian Hughes says when his customers call, they're not worried about interest rates.
Our customers are largely driven by the behavior of the animals, and the services that we have are something that most people would consider at the time that they call us a thing that is not really an option.
That also means that when people need a snake removed, they probably aren't thinking about how much it costs either.
We know that we could charge whatever we want for some of these. I also know that that's just not something we're ever going to do.
Hugh says he spends a lot of time making sure his prices are ethical, that he's not taking advantage of people when they're scared.
But it also means that whether the economy is doing really well, whether a lot of people feel that they can pay for the services or not, the service itself and the cost of those services don't really fluctuate.
It also helps that rattlesnakes don't pay much attention to the Fed either. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Say what you will about American consumers, but we are an adaptable bunch. Today's data point in evidence, food away from home in October, that's an actual category, food away from home, was 5.4% more expensive than it was a year ago. Here is the anecdotal follow-up. In the last Beige Book of 2023, which came out last week, the Kansas City Fed pointed out that restaurateurs in its district said revenues fell as more customers avoided expensive items and split more dishes. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes looks at what's happening there.
Lonnie Golden loves going splitsies at restaurants.
And I know that that's not a view that's shared by everybody you go out with. So you feel this out first. You say, hey, who wants to share? Who wants to split?
Golden, who's an economics professor at Penn State Abington, lives just outside Philly. But he took his partner out for a nice dinner in New York City last night and says the prices gave him sticker shock. So they didn't order entrees, but shared a few small plates like scallops and mussels. Golden says there were still leftovers.
Brought the mussels back with us on New Jersey Transit. We'll see if they survived in their original state.
To maybe avoid lugging seafood on public transit, Golden says it might make sense if restaurants were just more upfront about their portion sizes, especially now that sharing is more in vogue. At Mac Seafood, which has multiple locations on Cape Cod, owner Mac Hay says they used to charge a share fee if people split an entree, but that made customers grumpy. So now they'll just bring out a second plate.
Because it's more inconvenient for the kitchen to try to portion things in half. And frankly, it doesn't look good when you usually cut your entrees in half.
Hay says customers are also looking for value in other ways, gravitating towards specials like all-you-can-eat fish and chips. He says this does cut into the amount of money his restaurants earn.
But we hope if they're coming in for the fish and chips that they're going to, you know, buy a cocktail with that.
And drinking is something people don't stop doing when they're worried about the economy.
People eat a little bit less and they drink a little bit more. And the way that they drink changes.
Adam Halberg is CEO of Barcelona Wine Bar, which has locations around the country. He says they're selling fewer bottles of wine, but more sangria, which is the least expensive alcoholic drink on the menu. They're also selling fewer cocktails and more straight tequila and gin.
Cocktails are viewed as maybe a little bit more luxury than somebody who just wants something that is quicker and more effective and you don't have to drink as many of them.
Essentially giving you more alcoholic bang for your literal buck. I'm Stephanie Hughes from Marketplace.
We cover real estate all the time, right? New home sales, used home sales, rents, mortgage rates, prices, all the same old things all the time. Point being, if ever there was an industry ripe for disruption, it's housing. And maybe one place to start is how houses are built. 3D printing's been around for a while now. Think engineers making prototypes of car parts or architects printing small-scale models of buildings. What about 3D printing the buildings themselves, full-sized houses? A number of companies are doing just that, as Colorado Public Radio's Dan Boyce reports.
From inside his garage, Jim Scott demos a 3D printer that can build the concrete walls of houses.
That back and forth motion is what the printer does.
Scott's company is called StructureBot, and it's one of several trying to disrupt the housing industry. It's a tech company designing products for construction companies to purchase, like this giant printer. The prototype takes up most of his four-car garage in Colorado Springs. A 16 by 16 foot steel scaffolding supports a robot holding a silver cistern with a nozzle. Out of the nozzle comes concrete.
It starts at the bottom, and then it goes up, 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 up.
The nozzle lays down layers of specialized concrete, a couple inches wide. The result is a wall that looks kind of like concrete corduroy. And it could be a game changer in the world of affordable housing. Sherry Witt Brown, CEO of the Habitat for Humanity chapter in Greeley, Colorado, has been following this technology for a while.
For the first few years, it was a little bit more expensive, clumsy, maybe not cost-effective enough for affordable housing.
But when she recently had the chance to tour some 3D printed houses, she was blown away.
I've been in this business for over 37 years, and it's the first thing that's come along that I think it will revolutionize the industry.
Revolutionize because those concrete walls can be printed in hours versus the days or weeks it can take to frame a traditional home. They provide great insulation and can cut a household's energy bills in half. 3D printed walls also tend to be stronger, easier to maintain, and more resilient against natural disasters, especially important in wildfire-prone Colorado.
With 3D printed homes, you're looking at something that is much more fire resistant.
And at the same time, the houses look basically like any other single family home, just with those corduroy textured exterior walls. Habitat for Humanity will build up to 15 of these homes in Greeley next year and hopes to add dozens more after that. It's contracting with a builder called Alquist 3D. Founder Zachary Mannheimer has moved his whole company to Colorado and wants to make it an epicenter for shaking up home construction.
This industry is overdue for advancement, and that's what this technology is trying to do.
Along with the Habitat contract, Mannheimer says Alquist is working with a local community college to create a first-of-its-kind 3D building curriculum.
And once you go through that program, you'll be certified to be a 3D printer, and companies like ours will hire you.
3D printed concrete is really only used for making those corduroy walls, roofs, trusses, all the rest. That's all still done the traditional way, at least for now. And Ahlquist homes currently cost about the same as a standard lumber-built house. But Manheimer is hoping to drop the price by as much as 30% as his company scales up.
We're not there yet today, but within the next 24 months, we believe we will be.
If all these benefits pan out, Manheimer believes 3D printing could finally help put a real dent in the country's affordable housing crisis. In Colorado Springs, I'm Dan Boyce for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which falls firmly in the, all right, I guess we'll take it category. Saw this on CNN, data from the Real Christmas Tree Board, which is, yes, the lobbying arm of Big Christmas. Anyway, they did a survey of tree wholesalers back in September that found 25% of farms this year plan to raise wholesale prices 5 to 15%. Last year, it was 71% of growers bumping prices. All right, we're off. Our daily production team includes Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Sophia Terenzio. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.